Praise Jayanand Gauranga Das Prabhuji to enlighten us on the topics Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam Antalila 15.28 onwards. Hare Krishna Prabhuji Dandavat Panam. Please accept my humble obeisances. All goes to Srila Prabhupada and all Gurudevs. Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for giving your very valuable time and association to us and enlightening on this topic. I would like to hand over the call to Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalagaya Chakshurum Meelitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yudhapada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sakagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vithamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimati Jayapataka Swaminiti Namini Namo Acharya Padaya Nitai Kripa Pradhaini Gaurakathadhamadaya Nagragramatarini Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatharini Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadhadhar, Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Good morning and welcome everyone for this morning's conversation on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. I will be covering just two verses today and the first verse is Antyalila, chapter 15, verse 28. Ekadina Mahaprabhu Samudrati Reyayate Pushpera Uddihana Tatha Dekena Achambite. Translation. One day while going to the beach by the sea, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu suddenly saw a flower garden. Text 29. Lord Chaitanya mistook that garden for Vrindavan and very quickly entered it. Absorbed in ecstatic love of Krishna, he wandered throughout the garden searching for him. So these are the only two verses I'm going to be doing today. Panchakalpatrubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. So to understand this verse, let us take a look at what some of the acharyas are saying about these pastimes of Mahaprabhu. So here, this verse says that Lord Chaitanya mistook the garden for Vrindavan and he very quickly entered it. And he was absorbed in the ecstatic love for Krishna and he wandered throughout the garden and searching for him. So Jiva Goswami, let's start with him in his Bhakti Sandarbha in Anucheda 278. He differentiates the various levels of meditation on the Supreme Lord. That is from his name, form, qualities, and pastimes. And all this is based on the depth of absorption. And Jiva Goswami there recommends that we proceed in the meditation by following this order. That is first meditating on the Lord's, Supreme Lord's name, then his form. So when we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So to first focus on the Supreme Lord's name and then his form and then his qualities and then his pastimes. So this is the four order. So he calls, Jiva Goswami calls the first stage as Smaranam. This is, so all these forms, whether focusing on the name, followed by the form, then the qualities and the pastimes. These can go in four stages. One is called Smaranam, which is occasional remembrance of the Supreme Lord in one way or the another. Okay, so it can be in either of these four ways, but then one way or the other, there is a remembrance of the Supreme Lord. The second stage, he calls it as Dharana. That is, there is a more focused concentration of the Lord. The third one is called Dhyana. And in that stage, one specifically and consciously meditates on the Lord's name, form, qualities, and or pastimes. The fourth one, okay, is called Dhruvanusmriti. So here, where one meditates on the Lord, and this becomes a constant flow of nectar. The fifth stage is called trance or samadhi, where the Lord alone is present in one's thoughts and one is not even aware of oneself. And this you can see in so many situations in the Bhagavatam, like Queen, the mother of Lord Kapila, Devahuti, and when she was in the stage of samadhi, she did not even remember that she even had the body. So she was already liberated. And she did not even remember that she even had the body. So there are so many examples in Bhagavatam where in the last stage of trance and how there is no bodily consciousness that they even forget the existence of the body. And the Lord alone is present in one's thoughts and one is transported to the spiritual world. So the sum and substance here is there are any of these five stages. We go from focusing on the name to the form to the qualities to the pastimes. And these four, this transition happens to us in five stages of spiritual development. And first is Smaranam, which is remembrance. And then the second one is Dharana, which is focused concentration. And the third one is Dhyana, which is specific and conscious meditation on the Lord's name, form, and so on. And the fourth one is where the meditation itself becomes a constant flow of nectar. And the fifth and the final stage is trance or samadhi. So clearly the gopis of the Vrindavans, their meditation is like the trance of the yogis. However, the extreme depth of their meditation on Krishna as the absolute truth proves that the gopis are the topmost of the yogis. Out of all the yogis, the gopis are the topmost because of the, and that is clear from the depth of their trance and in their meditation. So let's see another acharya, what he says, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So he says, he comments on the same subject. And in his commentary of the Bhagavatam, he has a very amazing commentary of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it has been widely cited by Prabhupada and so many other acharyas. And he says that when one experiences these intense emotions, so what is the state of them is that one forgets everything else, although one is not in a state of illusion. So you would distinguish that. Okay, so even those in state of material illusion, they may also be forgetting so many things, but it is not the same. Okay, so this is the spiritual trance is where one forgets everything else, and although one is not in a state of illusion, they are in the mode of reality. That is shown in the, that's what is shown in this verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita here. The minds of the gopis were bound by that constant association with Krishna. And by his constant association, one is bound by the gopis with great strength. Okay, so Krishna is bound with the gopis with great strength. And that is what is the, so by the word bound, so what does the word bound means? That means that there is a paralysis. And that paralysis is caused by Krishna's colorful pastimes. And that paralysis is a strong group of intimate association which binds the functions of the gopis' minds to become the desire cause to fulfill Krishna's wishes. So whatever, so Krishna, so that is the kind of, and so they are paralyzed in terms of all other material functions. So the gopis even lost awareness of their bodies, but while going into this trance, they do not know even where they are from or where they had come from, in which direction they had come from. They have lost awareness of the material surroundings. So they are neither aware of this world, and so while experiencing, so let's compare this with someone who is experiencing Brahman, okay? So while experiencing Brahman, that is self-realization, a sage remembers nothing. However, the gopis experienced Krishna and not the impersonal spirit. So there is this example is useful in the sense that it shows that the forgetfulness of the gopis of the material circumstances is not meant to indicate that the attainments of the yogis and the attainments of the gopis are equal, because there is a vast difference between the gopis' love and the sage's achievements of self-realization or nirvana or whatever. And this is because the gopis love for, the gopis see the love for Krishna with a feeling of possessiveness. But the sage's love for Krishna is without that feeling. So in this way, there are so many variations here in terms of the trance of an impersonalist yogi and of those who are realizing Brahman, those who are realizing Paramatma, and those who are realizing Bhagavan, and those like gopis who are the topmost of all the yogis. So this is the elaboration that has been offered by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So we saw the elaboration that's been offered by Jiva Goswami in Bhakti Sandarbha. We saw what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says. Now let's see what Rupa Goswami says. So Rupa Goswami comments about this in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.38. So there he compares the bliss of this Brahman realization, self-realization, accumulated by, you know, whatever is the bliss associated here, okay, Brahmananda, he compares that with the bliss experienced by half of Brahma's life in samadhi cannot compare with one drop of the ocean of the happiness of the bhakti, which is achieved by the word bhakti itself means Krishna bhakti. There is nothing else. So when we say bhakti, it refers to Krishna bhakti. So Jiva Goswami further comments on the gopi's mood as Krishna describes. And so in his Krishna Sandarbha, Anucheda 176, he says that there are two kinds here. One is to the unmanifest pastimes and the manifest pastimes. Okay, so not distinguishing between the manifest pastimes are called prakata and the unmanifest is aprakata. So these pastimes, the gopis were not able to distinguish between these two. So between the manifest and the unmanifest. So the gopis remained in this world as just names and forms only, since their minds were completely with Krishna. And this state is called Mahabhava, which was very difficult for them to bear and which had become manifest due to the extreme longing due to their separation. So that means that you have the manifest pastimes of Krishna and you have the unmanifest pastimes, and gopis could not distinguish between these two. And so they really just stayed in the world. For a person, they could be visible, they were staying in the world, but only in names and forms. They were there in the world, but literally they were not in this world at all. They were entirely only in the spiritual world. So it might be looking like, okay, the gopis, Krishna, everybody came together in the Dwapar Yuga here, the end of the Dwapar Yuga, but literally the gopis are just in the spiritual. They just, in names and form, they were visible here, but they were not really there at all. And this state is called Mahabhava. And sometimes when Krishna comes to see the gopis, okay, so, the gopis get the association of Krishna, and they were extremely happy that their minds were again bound by the union. And they did not know whether those pastimes were manifest or unmanifest. So, gopis, so that means either it is manifest or unmanifest. So, gopis, when they focus on Krishna, they forget everything else. They don't, so when that is the focus, that is what they, so they're always in the spiritual domain. All those, there are hundreds and thousands of gopis. Their understanding of Krishna is to be that of the most charming lover. And in this way, they are unaware of Krishna's actual position. Yet, by intimately associating with Krishna, the gopis are completely under his will. According to Srimad Bhagavatam in 12.13, the intensity of gopis' love for Krishna is covered here. The 11th canto has very, very nice, describes this in a very nice method way. They have covered their knowledge of the supreme position. Okay, the supreme position of Krishna is covered. And this is again cited by Jiva Goswami in his Krishna Sandarbha 177. So even when Krishna apparently left from Dwaraka, and the gopis were separate, left to Dwaraka, and gopis were separated from him, they still remain fully attached to him as they attained higher and higher stages of love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they found no substitute for the source of happiness. And filled with intense pain that is stemming from the separation because of the deep love they did not, that they did not see any person other than Krishna, such as even their own friends, they could not see any other source of happiness other than Krishna himself. This means that now they see happiness as they are no longer separated from Krishna all night without being without Krishna, where they like a, and then those nights when they are with Krishna. So it is like the manifest and they have the unmanifest. So that any separation from Krishna seems to them like trillions of years. And so the same kind of a feeling is what is also seen with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he says, Yugayatam Nimijena Chakshusha Pravarshayatam Shunayatam Jagat Sarvam Govinda Virahena Me. That means without bereft of with even to pass less than a moment in the absence of Krishna, the gopis felt that those just dragged on like the days and nights of Brahma, because they are so long. The days and nights of Brahma are so long, it just dragged on. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, my Lord Govinda, Govinda Virahena Me, my Lord Govinda, because of the separation from you, I consider even a moment like a great millennium. And then tears flow from his eyes like torrents of rain. And he sees that the entire world has become void, that there is really nothing existing. So these transcendental sentiments of Mahaprabhu are intense. And those are, even though generally those, like we, when we read these things, it might be filled with material consciousness, but not be able to understand these things until and be able to penetrate the meaning of these things, of these pastimes, these intense pastimes. And in his agitation for Mahaprabhu, A day never ends, for even a moment seems like a millennium. So they don't even know the passing of day and night. So if a moment is like a millennium, so where is the question of passing of a day or a passing of a night? It just seems like a millennium. So, and there is incessant pouring of tears in his eyes, like clouds in the rainy season. So the three worlds have become void because of the separation from Govinda. So everything, so the all the three worlds above, the earth and the below, everything has become like void. And Mahaprabhu here says he feels like, you know, it were like the situation is like burning alive in a slow fire. So Lord Krishna has become indifferent to him just to test his love. That's the feeling of the gopis. And his friends say, you know, in some case, the gopis, you know, feel like in some, they say, oh, just disregard him, but they just cannot. So in this way, the intensity is like that. So Swarupa Damodar, who is a very intimate associate of Mahaprabhu, says the same thing in Prema Vivarta. This is cited by Jagadanand the Pandit, where he says that the Lord presides in the tip of his tongue. So Swarupa Damodar, he does not, even though he was exalted, most intimate to Mahaprabhu, but he says that the Lord is in the tip of his tongue and reveals the highest transcendental truth about himself. Okay, so it's not like Swarupa Damodar himself is revealing, the Lord Gauranga himself is standing at the tip of his tongue and revealing this transcendental truth about his own causeless mercy. Only then anyone is convinced. And that all that was narrated, okay, even though a devotee might say these things, but Swarupa Damodar, even though he's preaching, even though he's saying things, but Lord Gauranga is there in the tip of his tongue. And these topics of Mahaprabhu are actually the absolute truth, and they are completely devoid of any material qualities. They're completely devoid of any material qualities. They are, in fact, so transcendental and completely devoid of any material attributes that they will foster pure love of God. So descriptions of men and women in these, so when you, so there is just no material men and women in these pages. So there is nothing called man, nothing called women. So one might perceive their transcendental significance because one cannot perceive Krishna in a mundane literature, which deals with just mundane subject matter. So in a mundane literature, all there is just mundane matter, mundane lust and all. But these are transcendental literature, which is full of transcendental significance. And this is where one can perceive Krishna, but in a mundane literature, Krishna cannot be perceived. So as long as one is attached to the bodily concept of life and interested in only enjoying the senses, that person will never be able to grasp the spiritual truth. So the spiritual master who claims to be the representative of Lord Krishna, but does not understand the Lord's pure loving exchanges, is not fit to be in the position. And that devotion is a show of deception, according to Jagadanand the Pandit. So if somebody claims that they are a representative of the Lord and they cannot understand the loving exchanges of Krishna, it is all deceptive. And the person to be not to be understood as a bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, why is it that the person is not accepted as a bona fide spiritual matter? Because that person is under the clutches of Maya and is still an instrument of Maya. So there is a distinction there. If that person is an instrument of Maya, or if that person is an instrument of Krishna. And that's where the distinction comes. So the spiritual love of Krishna is untainted and pure, like the sacred waters of River Ganga. Okay, and that love is like an unlimited ocean of nectar, that the devotees feel that spiritual attachment and that loving relationship is totally free from even the slightest material contamination, like a spotless linen. So this pure love of God called Shuddha Bhakti is like an ocean of bliss. And if one could just have one drop from that ocean, it can inundate the entire universe. So one should feel so wretched that one is 100% attached to the material body and controlled by lust, and so that in the original form of pure spirit is never manifest. So that is what one needs to feel bad about. If one needs to feel bad about is how much one is attached to the material body, 100% attached to the material body, always controlled by Maya, that they can never see the original form of pure spirit. And what is the original form of pure spirit? Krishna himself. Krishna is the original form of pure spirit. The spirit, the form of Krishna made of spirit, is the original spiritual form from which everything else emanates. And hence, everything, all other spiritual forms are part and parcel of Krishna and separated. And hence, part of him and yet different. So, when one is blinded by this carnal love and rejects the pure spiritual love, then Lord Krishna does not respond to such a deceitful approach. But one who's sincere and earnestly implores Krishna for his mercy, they will be crowned with success. So, what is most important here is that one needs to be earnest in their endeavors and pursuit of Krishna without deceit. The ecstatic symptoms of the conjugal love are of the super mundane nature, supra mundane. It is not of this material nature. It is not something that we have experienced. They are always experienced, however, in the spiritual platform between Krishna and the other pure spiritual beings who have emanated from him and who are in constant relationship with him. So that loving relationship is of super mundane, supra mundane nature, and it's not tangible in the material platform. So in fact, so we can see now see how even among so we spoke about the gopis, let's also see about those who have progressed, like Vilva Mangala Thakur. So he has that Lord Krishna appeared before him in person and elevated him to the platform of that to for him to relish the loving exchanges with him. And in that transition, in that transcendental mood in Vrindavan, that he wrote those amazing book called as Krishna Karanamrita, which has some of those such high levels of supra mundane spiritual exchanges with Krishna, that Krishna came personally in front of him and elevated him to that platform. So that he became Vilva Mangala Thakur, he became detached from the demands of the physical pleasure and developed aversion to all the mundane sentiments. Okay, he developed an aversion to all mundane sentiments. And so this is so a development of a distaste for all non-scriptural spurious spiritual matters, okay, that have been accepted as true devotional sentiments. So we need to come above that and or impose some kind of a mundane concept on the supra-mundane spiritual exchanges between Krishna and his beloved devotees, who are the other spiritual beings. So basically, the thing is here is you have Krishna who is spiritual, and then you have all the other beings who are also spiritual, and the exchange is between Krishna, the original spiritual form, and the emanated spiritual forms, who are non-different and different from him. So we should not impose these mundane concepts on this kind of a spiritual relationship. And by the Lord's mercy, one will become purified and one will be able to understand these transcendental mellows. So at that time, the person, the advanced devotee, will reject the image or the sentiments and the emotions and all those kind of things, and they will surrender of the mundane nature, and they won't superimpose any of these things and surrender themselves to Krishna, and always engage in his loving service. So one who is very engrossed in the pleasures of the material body will never taste the transcendental loving exchanges with the beautiful form of boy Krishna playing flute. And that cannot evoke any kind of ecstatic emotions or spiritual sentiments. And that person is called as an unfortunate person who has identified the self with the body and is very busy decorating that body. Okay. He's very busy decorating the body. And that person is called unfortunate because the goddess of fortune does not reside in those places, and overall, it is an unfortunate situation. However, when the thunderbolt of death strikes that person, and he or she would not know what the next birth is, perhaps as an insect or worse, it's a horrible situation. On the other hand, if one can subdue the urge of material pleasure and develop a real taste for the loving devotional service at the lotus feet of Krishna, the son of Nanda, then he can see the exclusive face of Lord Krishna directly. And in that meditation, one starts with the lotus feet of Krishna and sees the toenails of Krishna, the beautiful toenails of Krishna, the feet. And many, many sages have meditated on the lotus feet of Krishna. And then Krishna has also come face to face in front of those devotees. So many examples. Bhagavatam is filled with those examples. How the Kumaras, when they went to the Vaikuntha, and then they were just the kind of reaction that they felt when they saw Krishna in the form as Narayana, face to face in front of him, they just didn't even expect. And the kind of reaction and how Narayana there, he handled that situation. So that person, when they swiftly return to the eternal home, when they are able to see the exclusive face of Krishna, and they're able to sport in the forest of Goloka in their spiritual body, dissociating themselves from their previous identity and material association. The subtle body is gone, the gross body is gone, and there is no complete dissociation. Dissociation from the previous identity and the material association, they're able to sport in the forest of Goloka. So that Goloka Praja, which is the eternal abode, is where one such an advanced devotee is elevates themselves to. And gradually, so we see that gradually one develops this mood of the gopis and begins to recollect their original identity in the spiritual world and cuts asunder. So they just cut all the material attachments, and Lord Krishna becomes their only object of love. And the soul and becomes the repository, and Krishna becomes the repository, and that soul becomes the repository of all that love. So he approaches the Lord through an intermediary who constantly reminds that person of Krishna. And in that way, the conjugal exchanges in the mood of the paramour goes on increasing. And such a relationship is even absent, even between Lord Narayana and Lakshmi, as it is considered immoral in the Vaikuntha. That is what the Goswamis have concluded. So pure devotion is impossible to attain for one who identifies someone as a man or a woman. These things don't exist at all. There is no man, there is no woman. So if anybody who identifies these things, pure devotion is impossible. And one can never attain the priceless gift of living this loving devotional service if the consciousness of the person is polluted by the association of materialistic people. Such pleasures are inevitably transient. Any material pleasure is inevitably transient and can never transport that person to the transcendental realm. So one who acts on the transcendental realm platform of rendering devotional service in the mode of the damsels of Goloka Vraja can alone cultivate the real spiritual life. So through living in the mood of the gopis, one is no longer attracted to the mundane exchanges between the materialistic people. So one who is eternal, so the eternal dealings, okay, and the conduct are perfect, and such a person following this path, this is a path of true religion, and they follow this path and never deviate from the scriptural injunctions. And internally, that person intensely cultivates the moods of the gopis, and they serve the lotus feet of Krishna with all their heart, and is truly eligible for attaining the love of Krishna. So one has to transcend this physical plane, and then the charming Krishna becomes that person's life's hero. And Krishna's consort, Srimati Radharani, becomes the heroine in all the transcendental pastimes, and then one serves them with the purest love. So indeed, not having a glimpse of the beautiful face of Krishna playing on his flute, we are still living in this world like a moth whose life is without a purpose, except for one purpose, that is to rush into flames and die. So really our life here in this world is just no purpose at all. So now let us apply this. So I'll give some basic thing here, and then I will stop this because the topic has been pretty heavy. So I will spend another 5 minutes, and then I will stop this, and then we'll have some discussion for 15 minutes. So this goes on in several stages, you see. So the first stage, you know, Rupa Goswami says that this the first stage in that in Raghavanuga Bhakti. So today I'm not talking anything about the regulated devotional service at all, the Vaidhi Bhakti which we are following. So this is all a glimpse of what is there in front of us, what is the future. So in the Raghavanuga Bhakti, there are many stages. So the first stage there is called ecstatic emotion towards Krishna, and that kind of devotion, okay, is called Anubhava. Anubhava, so it's not the real Bhava. So Anubhava, then that proceeds to what is called Bhava, and then from there it goes to Mahabhava, that is Shuddha Bhakti, pure devotion. So in this Anubhava, which is called ecstatic, so it is in the fringe. So that is like from Vaidhi Bhakti. So it goes in it's in the fringe, in the borderline. The ecstatic emotion of Krishna, it itself is manifest through nine different symptoms. Nava bhiri. So nine different symptoms it manifests. And what are this? Number one is forgiveness and forbearance. So extreme tolerance and forgiveness. Number two, a concern that time should not be wasted. So every second that we are spending is a waste, is we are wasting our time doing all kinds of mundane things that should be actually spent to go towards this spontaneous devotional service. And number three is detachment from all the material things. And number four, absence of false prestige. Okay, number five is we need to have hope that these things can happen. Number six, an eagerness, enthusiasm. Number seven, a taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord. And then there is an attachment to the descriptions of the transcendental qualities of the Lord. And the last one is some kind of an affection for the places in this, that like Mathura, Dwaraka, Vrindavan, and so on, Navadvip. So there is some kind of an attachment for those places where the Lord resides. So this is called Anubhava. Anubhava means subordinate signs. These are subordinate signs of emotion, of ecstatic emotion. And they are visible in a person. And these subordinate signs are explained in the Bhagavatam, actually in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that such symptoms of Anubhava, which is the basic stage in Raganuga Bhakti, is manifest in the heart when the love of God has just started to fructify. When the love of God has just started to fructify, these ecstatic symptoms begin to manifest. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.3.25 and 26. So this kind of devotional service and ecstasy is the preliminary stage of devotional service. And the love of God is called, and then it moves to the end stage called as Prema Bhakti. Okay, and it touches the, and there you will see, it will reveal the ultimate goal of all the great transcendentalists, and that the nectar that makes them mad after Krishna. So by chanting the holy name of the Supreme Lord, one comes to the stage of love of God. So then the devotees are fixed in their vow as an eternal servant of the Lord, and gradually so they attain. So what is the progress? So one is first fixed in the vow, in our oath or vow, as an eternal servant of the Lord. Gradually they become attached to the particular name and form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then the heart melts with ecstatic symptoms. Evam vrita swapriya namakirtya jathanurago nradachitta uchai asatyato roditi rauti gayati unmadavan rityati lokabhakyaha. So all these kinds of ecstatic pastimes, they are manifest. The primary characteristic is that of love of God. The secondary characteristic is complete softening of the heart. There's a softening of the heart and extreme possessiveness of Krishna. So up to the stage of ex-devotee's mood is that of a belonging to Krishna. And at the stage of ecstasy, the mood changes to one of possessiveness. So at that stage of love, the devotee's feeling of possessiveness further intensified by some kind of an exclusiveness, which is unique to Krishna. And then one moves to Bhava, and then it moves to Mahabhava. I'm going to stop this lecture here because it has just gone very much in depth. But more of these things about the details, there are so much of details. It's a vast subject, and most of it is even not tangible from the material platform. And but then it is always good to know what is the prayojana at the end of all what we're getting, the love of Godhead and the nectar, and what exactly it tastes, and why is it that we are doing so much of regulative service, for what is it that is achieved at the end. So I will stop here, and let's take any questions. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much, Prabhu. It was a very interesting class. Definitely, it was possible to actually get a glimpse of these different, at least a few initial stages of the Raganuga Bhakti, the explanation of the Prakata and the Prakata Leela, and how they actually see Krishna, the gopis, and then Bilva Mangal Thakur's example. All of this really helped to understand this very esoteric topic, very hard to understand. But then thank you for the very nice class, Prabhu. I don't have any questions, just wanted to thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. Thank you, Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Thank you for reading the commentaries of our Guru Parampara. That was very, very nice. And I wondered, I didn't hear, because I didn't hear the beginning of the class, but did you also read Prabhupada's purport to those verses? So that, because I wanted to hear what he had to say.
Do you want to share anything, Mataji? Do you want to
share? I wanted to hear the purport And then I wanted to share.
Why didn't you go ahead and share, Mataji?
Well, I need to hear the purport first because I don't have the book in front.
There is no purport here in this verse.
Oh, Prabhupada doesn't give a purport?
No.
Okay. Okay. Well, that was very satisfying that you quoted from the previous acharyas and just gave a very, very, very knowledgeable explanation of the different stages. And I appreciated that very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mataji. Please, please share, Mataji. We're very happy to hear from you.
Do we have anyone else with any questions?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. I have one question. Prabhuji, please correct me if my understanding is wrong. Prabhuji, you were mentioning that everything is Krishna, like even the jivas, we are a drop of Krishna, we are part and parcel of Krishna. Then if the part and parcel is also Krishna, then please correct me if the understanding is wrong. Then how does that individuality or the uniqueness come to the jiva that we are the servants of Krishna? So like how does the distinction come, Prabhuji, for the jivas if it is also part and parcel of Krishna, where in turn it is again Krishna? I got a little confused in that point.
So this one is the basis of the philosophy, Mataji, the Achintya Bheda Bheda. It's not like we're a drop of Krishna like that, but you know, Krishna in his Bhagavan feature is separate, and he is there distinctly separated from us, enjoying a relationship with the individual soul. But in quality, we are the same because Krishna is the original spiritual form from which all other spiritual forms have emanated. And those spiritual forms have emanated for his, he is a transcendental autocrat, and those spiritual forms have emanated to please Krishna. And in the sense that every living entity is spirit, and they are non-different from Krishna, because it's like, in the sense, what is there? The Abheda means that in the sense, all that is there is Krishna. And that is the Abheda, which is the that everything is spirit. But then there's the Bheda. And there it comes about the variegatedness. The spiritual, so it is not an undifferentiated spiritual mass as in the Kevala Dvaita, but it is differentiated, spiritually differentiated forms. Like for, okay, I'll make it a little simpler here. If let's say you have a mountain. So you have a material mountain, and let's say you have a spiritual mountain. So what is the difference? Material mountain is, there is a top, there is a bottom, there may be sunlight on one side, there may not be sunlight on other side. So it has all these kinds of features. What is a spiritual mountain? A spiritual mountain, there is no distinction between the top and the bottom. The top is the same, the bottom is the same, everywhere is the same. So in that way, there is a spiritual mountain. So the spiritual world is filled with this kind of spiritual entities, whether it is mountain, and they're all conscious. So they're all conscious and in relationship with Krishna. So in this way, there are differences. We are not, it is not like we're just drops of Krishna like that. It is, we are separated energy of Krishna, and in fact, even vulnerable to be covered by Maya, just as how sun rays can get covered by clouds and may not be able to see the relation. The sun rays, even though emanated from the sun, and both in both of them by nature have this, have the luminosity is the substrate in both. And in that sense, they are non-different. And but because the clouds have covered those rays, it doesn't mean that those rays don't have a relationship with the sun. So there is a dependent relationship between the energetic Krishna and the energy, the living entity. And this relationship is evident in almost every verse in the Bhagavatam, which we can see there are verses which does talk about the Abheda part, which talks about the spiritual nature of the living entity. And there are clear verses which talk about the differences, the Bheda. So, and both of these simultaneously exist and inconceivably. Does that answer your question, Mataji?
Yes, yes, Prabhuji, that clears it. Yeah. Thank you very much. So this jiva, when the coverings are gone, when the material coverings are, everything is gone, it can come to the bhava, the prema to the Krishna. So the only thing is that's a contamination or the material dirt which is on us, which is not letting us to feel the prema for Krishna.
No. There is a long way to go, Mataji. When the material covering is removed or something, you know, one may attain Brahman realization. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nasochati Nakanshati. Maybe material anxieties may not be there, material stresses might not be there, but they just reach a very basic platform called self-realization or Brahman realization. And then there is a long way to go. After that, that process, what you're saying is called self-realization. So after that, then the next stage of realization is that of the yogis. So there is a Paramatma as the friend and a constant companion, and then they meditate on that Paramatma, and then that is the second level of realization. And then there is a third realization as the personality of Godhead, as Bhagavan, which is the third level of realization. And in that, there are so many gradations. And then in an absolute platform, maybe those differences cannot be said, but like just as how you have a grass, a spiritual grass in Vrindavan, when Krishna steps on the grass is serving Krishna, and it is content, and it is completely self-sufficient, and in service, as Shantarasa, they are completely self-satisfied in the spiritual world. At the same time, there is also the love of the gopis. So there are so many gradations, and everywhere you will see this, there is difference and non-difference. So even in the spiritual domain, everywhere you can see this concept of there is difference and non-difference. So material illusion removal is just a side effect. It is just a symptom of the first thing, which is Brahman realization. But then one is Brahman realized, at that time the Krishna Bhakti can start. At the very basic, Krishna Bhakti can start at that stage called as Brahma Bhuta Prasanna. So what does it say? Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. At that stage, Krishna Bhakti can start. So self-realization is a prerequisite for God realization.
Okay, so it's a very long process, Prabhuji, but it's wonderful. The self-realization is a beginning for Krishna Bhakti.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. It is a long process, but even though it is very arduous, Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabaha, it is very hard. Manushyanam Sahasreshu, Sahasra is thousand, Sahasreshu, thousand multiplied by thousand. Out of a million, Manushyanam Sahasreshu, Kaschid, perhaps somebody can realize self Kaschid Siddhe. So perhaps one person can become self-realized, and out of those many millions, one person can enter into God realization. Even though it all sounds hard, there is one catalyst to all these things, and that is an association of a pure devotee. And that association can make this arduous process of transcending the material cosmos and entering and experiencing the spiritual domain possible. And that is this pure devotee. Somehow or the other, if one is fortunate to get in touch with a pure devotee, all their problems will be, all these things will go away. And it may not be sound that arduous. It'll be more like, instead of climbing stairs, it'll be more like taking an elevator.
Yes, Prabhuji. So devotee association, the catalyst of achieving Krishna Bhakti.
Yes, devotee association, and one needs to keep looking for somehow or the other to come to be able to serve the lotus feet of a pure devotee. A pure devotee is so rare. When you look at Bhagavatam, the exalted nature of one of our forefathers in our spiritual line, says Narada Muni, pretty much so many people he has favored. Whomever you take in Bhagavatam, he has pretty much given them thing. If you take Dhruva Maharaj, he has given Prahlad Maharaj, he has given. And then And then the descendants of all the Dhruva Maharaj, all the way till the Prachetas, everybody, even though Lord Shiva, he instructed them, even there the conclusion was given by Sage Narada Muni. Even though in the Rudra Gita, he instructs, Lord Shiva instructs them. At the end, Narada Muni comes and instructs them also to keep them established. Wherever you take Narada, so that is a pure devotee, we need to be in search of them. And then if we are able to see the lotus feet of a pure devotee, that will make all this process, the theoretical process, whatever I spoke today is theoretically possible. And we have a small number of years left, and it is a big risk that we are taking. Otherwise, you know, we'll end up in some other body, maybe in this world, maybe in some other world, we'll end up in some other body. So we have to take some quick steps here. Otherwise, who knows what the situation will be in, if we are born in this earth back. Look at how the Kali is going. It might be even more hotter next birth.
Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you very much, Prabhuji, for that explanation. So that clarified most of the concept you see, because in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says even the yogis has to take millions of births to come to reach him. So you said the devotion, the association of a pure devotee makes it into an easier process. Thank you, Prabhuji. Such a wonderful class, and your answers clarified.
Thank you. They are like the touchstone, Chintamani, Shuddha Bhakta Chintamani. They are like the touchstone of devotional service. Somehow or the other, if one can see a pure devotee, all the problems will be solved. Real problems.
Wonderful. Thank you, Prabhuji. Jai Sachinandana. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for beautiful answers. I request any other devotees, if you have any other questions, you can please go ahead.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Oh, yeah, I was disconnected. I just had to reconnect. So, can you take a question?
Yes, Mataji, you can go ahead with your question.
Okay, yeah. In your answer just now to Mataji, you were describing a spiritual mountain. And so I was intrigued by that part where you said, you know, in a spiritual mountain, there's no top, no bottom. So can you help me? Maybe it's just too inconceivable for me to understand, but I was wondering if you could help me to understand that better.
I mean, analogies may not be that perfect, Mataji, but then all I meant there was that there is let's just take that the material eyes, we are looking at a material mountain, so called, because we are looking Hare Krishna. So we're looking at a material mountain. Let's say sunlight is falling on one side, and then you have no sunlight on the other side. Rain is falling on one side, no rain on the other side. So you might have like an orthographic rainfall on one side of the mountain. You won't have any rainfall on the other side of the mountain. So there are dualities. That means that mountain presents dualities. Trees might grow on one side. Trees may not grow on the other side. You can see that even in, any mountain, you can see that, like, unless all the sides are receiving rainfall. So there are dualities. So in the spiritual world, there are no dualities, material dualities. That's all I meant. When I say there's no top or bottom and stuff, because the top of the mountain is spiritually one with the bottom of the mountain. Because everything is made of spirit. Like the Govardhan Hill is made of spirit. So the spirit, what is the difference between the top and the bottom, right? Because both are made of spirit.
Let me see if I can clarify this for myself. So, because, you know, this word dualities, it always poses a bit of a problem for me, because it seems like that word means different things in different contexts. But in this case, you're saying that, you know, in the spiritual world, everything is spirit. There's nothing. And so in that sense, there's no duality. Everything is like one substance. But in the material world, you know, in one sense, everything is also one substance because everything is matter, right? So in a material mountain, you know, the top is matter, the bottom is matter. So in that sense, a material mountain doesn't seem to be subject to like that duality thing. So I think I'm still kind of missing the something.
So in the material domain, Mataji, everywhere one can perceive differences. But in the spiritual world, there is all these dualities will disappear. These dualities will disappear. And everybody is in the, all the spiritual forms are in the mode of service to Krishna. Everybody's intently working, like when the Kumaras, when they went to Vaikuntha, you can see in the Bhagavatam that they were, they saw so many people in Vaikuntha, they were all working. What were they doing? They were like cleaning, and there was nothing to clean. Everything was perfectly clean, but they were still cleaning because all they can see is their service to Krishna. They were intensely working, cleaning some kind of already clean floors, clean area. So that means that, so what this tells you is that there are so many forms, so many spirit, but there is no duality there because everything is that service, everything is non-dual. But the same service here in the material world will have dualities. There will be, so it's the...
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if you can explain without with using words other than the word duality, because it's this word that gives me problems.
Okay, then we'll just skip that word, Mataji. It's okay. So no need for that word. There is how should I put it? So you don't want me to use the word dualities, but then
can we use the word difference?
Yes, but the thing is, in the spiritual world also, there is a oneness, but there is also a difference there, in the sense that, you see,
yeah, that was my problem.
There are no dualities. Yeah. There is there is an inconceivable bheda. The spirit is, there is a bheda and there is an abheda, but there are no dualities. So from a spiritual eyes, everything is samasarveshu bhuteshu. That's the thing. Samasarveshu. Everything is, all the living entities, spirit is seen identical. That is spiritual realization. Everything is identical. There is no man, there is no woman, but there is this constant service towards Krishna. If there is everything, so we just have to think this way. If everything is the same, if everything is made of spirit, then where is the question of service coming then? So then where is the difference between Krishna and us? So that is the key difference there. There is this non-dual substance. Okay, let me put it that way. Non-dual. It's a non-dual substance. Vadantita tatvidam tattvam yajnanam advaitam. So it is, advaitam is there. Intrinsically it is there in Vaishnava philosophy. Advaitam achyutam anantarupam. That advaita is there. But on top of it, there is variegatedness. On top of it, there is bheda. So advaitam, achyutam. So the word, it's there. That is why it's not like we are. So as a spirit, everything is one without a two. But they are variegated with the original spirit being Krishna and everything emanating out of him, and yet different and non-different from him.
Okay, I'm going to suggest an analogy and you can let me know if it's appropriate. So let's say I want to make some cookies and I have the cookie dough, right?
Yeah.
Or the batter, right?
Yeah.
So there's one batter or dough that I have, but out of that dough, I can make, you know, cookies that look like trees. I can make cookies that look like, you know, round shapes, triangle shapes, you know. But so the cookies will all look different from each other, right? But in one sense, they're all the same because they're all made from the same dough. Is that appropriate analogy?
The only thing with that analogy is that the original form still remains the original form. Even it is not like Krishna is a batter and we just came out and then deformed and became a cookie, you know, something like that. But
But
the original form remains the original form. So from an original form, you take so many things out and still the original form remains the original form. And all the other forms are meant for the enjoyment of the original form.
Okay. So as long as the dough stays intact, then the analogy works, right?
The analogy is fine. It's like if you have a gold mountain and then so many gold particles have emanated out of the gold mountain. But the original gold mountain stays intact. So all those gold particles can now get covered by sand, which is called Maya. If somebody comes and blows the sand out, which is a spiritual master, then the gold particles can reveal itself and can see the gold mountain. And the gold particle is much safer to go near the gold mountain, maybe because with another wind, it's possible that the gold particle will again get covered by sand. So many analogies can be formed, like your dough analogy. I gave you a gold mountain analogy.
Okay, Prabhu. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It's clear now.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Any other devotees have any other questions for Prabhuji? If nobody have any other questions, we can end the call here. Actually, one Mataji raised the hand.
Oh, okay.
Preeti Devi Dasi. Mataji, you can go ahead. Sorry, Prabhuji.
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for the wonderful class.
Thank you.
You are answering one Mataji that pure devotee association is must. Otherwise, it is a long process. This is really so. My question is how to identify pure devotee and how to get the pure devotee association, Prabhu. So
that is the hardest thing, Mataji, because one has to be free of envy and pray to Krishna so intensely that he shows the pure devotee to us. Because if that is shown, then everything else will follow. So Krishna has no problem giving material problems, material things, and all those others. It's really no solving at all. One, if you want money and those kind of things, Krishna will always give. There's just nothing there to it. But showing a pure devotee requires that intense sincerity and intense want. It's called, the correct word for that is called greed. That intense greed to attain Krishna, then when we are able to, pure devotees are there. And then, but we need to stop judging people through our
material. Pure devotees are there, but unable to find out, Prabhu, with the conditioned.
With all our conditionings and all the dust that is accumulated around our heart, Chetho, Dharapada, Marjanam, if we cleanse it with sincere chanting and move up in the process of extreme focus chanting first on the names and then the form and then the qualities and so on, then the Lord will reveal to us the pure devotee. And that will be the greatest treasure. But we have to earn it. We have to earn it. And there is mercy component. Even though how much ever effort you put at the end, it is not because of what we do. At the end of the day, Krishna has to give it by causeless mercy, because there is no way we can deserve it anyway. At the end of the day, whatever we do, at the end of the day, Krishna will be merciful. Because what is to say that how do we know that we will be able to even ever earn it? So there is an earning component in it. But if you see the magnitude, the earning component of the effort that we put in will still be minuscule compared to the mercy component. There are two components to it. One is our effort, and the other, the second component is mercy. The effort is very important to gain the mercy of Krishna. And then, but if, with that effort, the costless mercy of Krishna descends, and then we'll be able to see the pure devotee. And by the pure devotee, all we have to maybe hear is just one or two words from the pure devotee. That is enough. The pure devotee's face, touch, anything is enough to liberate us from the material existence. Maybe one touch of the pure devotee or one word, hearing one or two words, that is enough. And that, and with that thing, the pure devotee will intend in then sow the seed of called bhakti lata beach. So that seed is sown deep in the heart, and then we have to slowly grow that creeper without letting the weeds come in, and slowly water it and start growing that creeper, which is very delicate and can be easily broken, and we have to slowly grow that. And so, and then in terms of the pure devotee will show us Krishna back, how to go to Krishna. So it's like a two process there. One, Krishna shows us the pure devotee, and then the pure devotee shows us Krishna, and we get more firm conviction, and we keep proceeding forward with a lesser and lesser chance of fall down as we proceed further.
Yes, thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Thank you.
Amazing answer. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Anant Koti Dhanwat Pranam Shile Prabhupada Sulagudin Kiji.
So we can end the call here. Thank you so much once again, Prabhuji, for such a wonderful and enlightening class. We look forward for your association in future. Let's pay our obeisances to Prabhuji. Vancha Kalpata Rubyasya Krupa Sindhubya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. His Grace Jayanand Gauranga Das Prabhuji Ki Jai. Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Sri Hanuman, you raised hand. Okay, we are ending the call here.
Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you. One second.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for joining.